Well, last week, we started in on our message series through the book of Ruth, and we began with chapter 1, where it talks about the time during the judges, the time of Israel during the judges. And there was a man from Judah at that time named Elimelech, and Elimelech moved his entire family from Bethlehem to Moab. Now, Moab was a land where there was a lot of pagan worship. God's name was reviled. They didn't like God at all, and they were kind of enemies with Israel. And the reason that he moved there was because there was a famine in Judah. There was no food. And so he decided, I got to feed my family. And so he chose to move his family to this land. Now, Elimelech was married to a woman named Naomi. They had two sons named Kilian and Mahlon. But unfortunately for this family, after they moved to Moab, Elimelech died. He died. So he's this patriarch. He moves his whole family clear to this godless country, and then he dies. Well, here's Naomi, and she's left with her two sons, Mahlon and Kilian, and they grew up, and they married Moabite women. And after they had lived there in Moab about 10 years, another unfortunate thing happened. Both Mahlon and Kilian also died. And so now they were three widows living in this pagan land who had to figure out how to take care of themselves and scratch out a living for the hard way. And Naomi heard some good news, though, regarding her homeland. She heard that there was once again food in the land of Judah, that the famine was over. And so she decided to go back to Judah and bring her two daughters-in-law with her. And so she started on the trip, and they're heading that way. But along the way, Naomi realized, you know, my two daughters-in-law might not be able to enjoy Judah like I can enjoy Judah. That's not their homeland. They might be ridiculed because they're Moabites, you know, an outcast. They're from the land of the enemy. They've never even been there, so they might not enjoy it like I enjoy it. And so she told them, you know what, go back to your father and your mother's house. Go back there. And she even blessed them and prayed for them that the Lord would show kindness to these women and provide them with new husbands so that they can have a new life there in their land. And she kissed them goodbye, and they all wept aloud, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye. That was one of the daughters. But the Bible says that Ruth, the other daughter, clung to Naomi. She decided she wanted to come back to Judah with Naomi, even though she'd never been there. It wasn't her homeland. She wanted to leave everything she knew, and she wanted to go with Naomi. Do you remember last week how powerful her words were when she made that declaration, that commitment? She said, "Do not urge me to leave you or return from following you. For where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts me from you." That's not the right address there, but that was in chapter 1. When she made that declaration, that commitment to go with Naomi and to be there serving her gods, right? She was willingly destroying all the old loyalties of her old life, separating herself from her father and mother, from all the gods of Moab, and embracing this life of worship to the God of Israel. Serving with Naomi is just amazing. And so they do. They head on. They reach Bethlehem. And as they enter town, they cause quite a commotion. You know, this re-entry coming back into Bethlehem. And people were saying, you know, can this be Naomi? Can this really be the same woman? I mean, the same woman who left with a husband and two boys and a smile and a pocket full of money? Can this be the same woman? Because now here she is, and her clothes are different. Her family's different. She doesn't have a husband. There's no kids. There's no boys with her. She's got these two Moabite women in tow. And she's just downcast. She's poor in spirit and in finances. She seems like a completely different person. When she left Judah, she was smiling and sweet, but now her smile was gone. Her attitude had changed into bitterness and resentment. She was blaming God for her poverty and her troubles. And she was telling the people of Bethlehem, "Don't call me Naomi. Don't call me that anymore. Why should you call me Naomi? Because the Lord has testified against me and caused me all this trouble. So call me Mara instead. Call me Mara." So she was choosing resentment towards God for the failures and the pain and the hurts and the losses that she went through. And that was a big mistake, because all that blame and that resentment and that bitterness was just compounding the feelings of being overwhelmed as she faced this new life back in Judah after being gone for so long. Now, we don't know at this point how Ruth was taking all of this, right? You know, she thought that she was following Naomi, who had shown some strength back in Moab, and that she had a good God. She was ready to follow this great God with her mother-in-law. But suddenly, the only person she knew in this new land was seeming to have this mental break, and she was turning bitter against this God that she served. But it doesn't say either way in chapter 1 how Ruth handled all that. Meanwhile, God is unfolding this amazing plan for both of these women back here in Judah, and they don't even know it. It's going to be great. You're going to see this. Today we're going to take a look at chapter 2, and we're going to see this plan kind of beginning to take shape. So grab your Bibles and turn there if you would, because that's where we're going to be spending most of our time, Ruth chapter 2. And here at the beginning of chapter 2 of Ruth, we're introduced to a man named Boaz. Now Boaz was a close relative of Naomi's deceased husband, Elimelech. And we know that he had some wealth because he had fields and servants and so we know that he was kind of a wealthy guy. And it's the time of the barley harvest, this time of year when she was returning. And so Ruth, looking for a way to provide for herself, to feed herself, and to feed Naomi even, asks Naomi if she might go into the fields and pick up whatever grain was dropped on the ground and left over by the harvesters. And it just so happened that the field that she went to was the field of this man named Boaz. You see, God's already at work here. Now, when Boaz arrived to check on the progress of his harvest, he greeted Ruth and the others who were out picking up what his harvesters were leaving behind, and he greeted them with a blessing, "The Lord be with you." Now, this practice of what Ruth was doing and these other poor folks that were in the field picking up the extra grain that was left over is a practice known as gleaning, and it was a customary way for helping to take care of those who didn't have the means to take care of themselves. Now, immediately, I'm kind of drawn to Boaz in this. I don't know about you, but I'm kind of drawn to Boaz because we can see how he treated these people. I mean, he could have simply just put up with Ruth and these people that are in his field picking up the extras. You know, they're coming in there kind of that way, and they're just taking up whatever's left behind. Now, he could have just put up with them. He could have cracked the whip on his harvesters and said, "Hey, make sure you're not leaving anything behind. That way those gleaners will go to another field and leave us alone." But he didn't just put up with them, did he? And he wasn't just polite to them. He instead greets them and blesses them, saying, "The Lord be with you. The Lord be with you." Now, he didn't have to do that. He could have treated them as second-class citizens. He could have not paid any attention to what they were doing. He could have chased them off, or worse yet, you know, hurt them, but instead he greeted them as he would his own friends. "The Lord be with you." This is an all right dude, I think. Now, in fact, I'm led to believe that he even got to know or at least recognize those people who were gleaning in his field, because we're told that when he didn't recognize Ruth, he asked about her, right? Now, maybe he just wanted to know who was in his field so he could protect what he, you know, his investments, but we don't know. But when he found out who Ruth was, and that she'd even asked permission to do what she was doing, and that she was a hard worker, only taking a short rest, working since the early morning, he invited Ruth to stay and work only in his field rather than going to other fields around his. He was protecting her. He told his servants to be sure that she wasn't assaulted, and he even made arrangements for her to get all the water that she needed and to have a little more leftovers even left behind for her to pick up. And even besides that, he told his workers not to give her a hard time about getting this special treatment. Boaz made it clear that she was to be provided for in this way. He was treating her better than all the other gleaners, and even though she was a relative by marriage, it was still an unexpectedly kind thing for him to do for her, because she was a foreigner from another land, a land that was actually enemies with Israel. At the end of the day, Boaz tells her how thankful he was for how she was taking care of Naomi. And in light of all that had happened to her and how she had left her father and her mother's house to go and live in this place where she knew no one, she didn't know any of the customs, anything like that. And he knew how much courage that took, how much strength that took, and what a commitment that was. And so he invites her to eat with him and he gives her not just a little bit of food to tide her over. He lets her eat until she's full, until she's satisfied. and then gives her enough that she can take some home yet to Naomi. She had enough left over. And so Ruth took these leftovers and everything that she had gleaned that day, and she brought it to her mother-in-law, Naomi. And when Naomi learned which field that she had been so blessed in, that it was the field of her relative Boaz, she knew that it was God that orchestrated all of it. She was starting to see this plan unfold. And she told Ruth to keep working in that field because she would be in safe hands. And so now, I've given you a real big picture of chapter 2, right? We haven't gotten into it yet, but we've given you the overview of what's going on there. So let's back up a little bit and take a little closer look at what's going on in here and some of the lessons that we can learn from Ruth chapter 2. And the first thing that I think that strikes me about Ruth chapter 2 is that it's just this incredible faith that Ruth displayed for us. Ruth had just incredible faith. Even being in a foreigner in this new land, and completely strange to her, and she has this incredible faith, and it's just amazing. So it says there in back up there. Oh yeah, back that up a little bit. I'm sorry. There we go. Ruth's faith. So verse 1 here in chapter 2. Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go into the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." And he said to her, "Go, my daughter." She said to her, "Go to my daughter." So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. So here's Boaz, right? This wealthy relative of Elimelech, Naomi's deceased husband. And we don't know what Boaz did during that time of the famine that caused Elimelech to run off. We don't know what he did. It doesn't say. But it's pretty obvious that he didn't choose to run off to this pagan land like Elimelech did, because here he is, he's been in the land, he still has fields, he's rich, he's wealthy, right? He stayed the course, he trusted God to provide even during the tough times. And apparently God provided for him because he still is doing pretty well. But Elimelech had made this poor choice to run off to a land where God was reviled, where God was hated. And his family went through some really difficult times because of it. In fact, he died, and his sons died, and the three widows that were left had to scratch out a living for themselves. Now, when Naomi finally heard that the famine in Judah was over, she came home, but she was much poorer in finances and in spirit. Now, the word relative here in verse 1, it carries a kind of a significant meaning to it in this book of Ruth. In fact, the original language says that it means that Boaz was more than just any relative. He was also sort of a family, kind of a representative, like, I don't know what else you would call it, like kind of maybe almost like a chief or something like that. But this is important because it means that he is called the kinsman redeemer of that family, of Elimelech. Now, in the role of kinsman redeemer, he has the option, if he's got the ability to and the means to, he has the option to carry on the family line, the name of Elimelech, so that the people of Israel won't forget him. That his family line will be carried on. He can take care of those descendants of Elimelech and even propagate more descendants for that line to carry on that name, and that way he won't be forgotten. Verse 2 then tells us that Ruth asks Naomi to allow her to glean in the fields so that they will have some food to eat. Now we see that Ruth here is taking the initiative, even in a foreign land where she knows no one, so that she can support her mother-in-law and herself. She wasn't about to moan about her situation. She wanted to work. She wanted to provide. And this custom of this poor widow here in Israel, like Ruth, working in the fields in the hot of the sun, picking up what is left behind in the workers in order to feed herself, was meant to be sort of like a social assistance program so that the poor would be able to provide for themselves as they work with dignity, right? And if you've ever earned anything in your life, you know what a difference that is between earning something or having something just given to you, right? It just means more, doesn't it? When you earn something, it means more to you. It feels good to have accomplished something. There's something about hard work and diligence and industry that lifts our spirit and gives our lives purpose and meaning, reminds us of the value that we have in God, that he's given us work to do, right? These are things that handouts just don't do for us. They just can't do that. Now, don't get me wrong. There are times in all of our lives where we all need a little bit of help. And there are some really amazing things that gifts can do for our spirit as well. But it's a whole different thing than when you earn it, when you work to earn something. They just can't do, gifts just can't do what work can do. And Ruth knew these things. She knew the value of working, not just to provide for her physical needs, but to provide for her spirit and her emotional needs as well. And so she served with faith and with sacrifice, trusting that as she went about this work that was before her, that God would also provide for her. She trusted that. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't think that was probably real easy for Ruth. You know? I mean, as difficult as it was to scratch out a living in her homeland with a husband, it couldn't have been appealing or easy or any of that stuff to try to figure out how to do that same thing in a new land where there's new language, new customs, all these different things. Especially if you're an outcast, you know, you're of a land of the enemy. So, but she had made this commitment to Naomi. She had committed to the God of Israel. She placed all of her eggs in one basket, and she made that commitment in faith that she would take care of Naomi and herself. And she went all in. And sometimes those difficult choices and those difficult times in life are exactly the things that God uses to shape and refine our faith. 1 Peter 1, 6 and 7 reminds us of this truth. It says, "In this you rejoice, though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been grieved by various trials, so that the tested genuineness of your faith, more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ." You know, this illustration is of precious gold being refined by fire so that it burns away all the impurities, all the ugly stuff from our lives, and produces a perfect final product. And while that sounds really great, really neat to us, just to our ears, yeah, that's great. It makes us perfect, burns away all that stuff. You know, the refining process, it's not really easy when you're the one being refined, is it? You know, it requires intense heat for a sustained amount of time, long enough to burn away all that ugly stuff. And in the same way, refining our faith takes considerable amounts of hardships and sacrifices to go through. But in the end, is perfection. And that perfection won't happen in this lifetime. God is always at work perfecting us, but we won't be perfectly in His image until He calls us home or until He returns. But in the meantime, He's working on us. He's holding us to that fire so that we will become more like His Son, Jesus. And so that our lives will bring praise and glory and honor to His name, like that 1 Peter verse says, right? Results in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. So this commitment that Ruth made, the faith that she demonstrated in leaving the gods of Moab, her mother, her father, she left everything she'd ever known, and then coming to live with Naomi and serving the God of Israel, her faith was tested, and it was found to be true, and she grew closer to Him. She was faithful. She didn't cry about her new home. She went about with humble determinedness and set about working to provide for herself. She had faith that God would provide as she was faithful to Him. So that was some faith, right? The next thing that stands out to me is Ruth's service. And in verse 4, we see this starting to take shape. "Behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, 'The Lord be with you.' And they answered, 'The Lord bless you.' Then Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, 'Whose young woman is this?' And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, 'She is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, "Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers." So she came and has been working, continued early from early morning until now, except for a short rest." Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter, do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn." So this guy Boaz was actually blessing those who couldn't afford any other sustenance than to come to his fields and pick up the leftovers out of the dirt. He was treating them like fellow image bearers of the God that he served. That is just amazing to me. It shows exceptionally godly character of Boaz, right? He's in a place of authority, and he still treats them just like they're an image bearer of the God that he serves. As I mentioned earlier, he could have ignored them. He could have driven them off or worse, but not Boaz. He was different. He was a man of God, just like Ruth was becoming a woman of God. And God was connecting them get together here for a purpose. It's no wonder why Boaz's servants were working hard enough and diligently enough to do what he asked them to do. And it helped to make him the wealthy man that he was. It's easy to see the real character of someone in authority just by how they relate to their staff, how their people talk about them, what they think of them, right? And a huge piece of being a witness for the love of Christ or against the love of Christ is whether or not you pointed those who you were in authority over toward God or away from God, right? Our witness does that. And Boaz, his witness pointed people towards God. But we're talking about Ruth here. And she too demonstrated godly character as she worked in the field, gleaning what she could from this harvest. Did you catch in verse 7 how that worker, the servant in charge of the harvest, how he talked about Ruth? What he communicated to Boaz about her? I mean, he could have treated her poorly too. He could have just acted like she wasn't there, or he could have lied about her. He didn't get a bigger paycheck for telling Boaz that she was doing such a good job and that she was a hard worker and that she'd ask permission. No, but he didn't do that. And so he couldn't help but notice how hard she was working because of her diligence, how she worked from early morning until now and only took a short rest. He was impressed with how hard she was working, even in the hot sun. And so even though Ruth may not have been aware of it, she was being observed by the people around her. And those people who saw her working saw how she handled herself, and they were getting an idea of the kind of person she was in her heart, right? And we're watched. People are looking at us because it says in Luke 6:45, the good person out of the good treasure of his heart produces good, and the evil person out of the evil treasure produces evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. You know, I know it's popular thought right now to go around saying, you know, we shouldn't judge anybody. Don't judge anybody, right? You can't judge anybody but yourself. And I think how that started and what is meant by that at the heart of that is that we shouldn't treat people poorly simply because of some preconceived notion we have about who they are or a people group that they belong to. And that's true, and I agree with that. But I think too often today, people don't mean that when they say, don't judge me or don't judge anyone. What they mean is simply, if your opinion is different than what my opinion is about what I want it to be, then you're wrong. And you need to just get away with your judgy McJudgerness, right? Just stop it with that, because you're wrong. And that's just simply ridiculous, because everybody makes judgments. Everybody makes judgments. Even, and maybe especially that person who says, don't judge me, is making a judgment. Because they're judging what you are doing, right? They're calling what you're doing bad. They're judging your intentions. They're judging you without knowing you. Everyone judges. If we don't make judgments about things and even about people, literally nothing can be accomplished at all. Right? I can't step out of here if I don't think that it's better for me to leave here than stand here all day, right? I can't drink my coffee if I don't think that coffee tastes good. I literally nothing can happen if I don't make a judgment. Nothing can be accomplished. And people are watching us, just like they were watching Ruth, right? People are watching us, and they're making judgments, as they should. As they should. That's why it's important to take notes here on Ruth's service, how she worked. When people look at our work, it's either, when they look at our work, our treatment of those around us, especially if those people are different than us, how we spend our money, how we spend our time, whether our speech is encouraging, uplifting, challenging, or whether it's to cut down, destroy, and to hurt. All that stuff adds up to our service to God. And when they look at those things, they're going to see one of two different things. They're going to either see God glorified, or they're going to see God's love trampled on and made to be worthless, made to be a joke. Boaz saw God glorified through Ruth's service. And because he saw God glorified through her service, he made the decision to be sure that she was cared for. He provided companionship for her. He said, keep close to my young women. He provided companionship for her. He provided protection for her. He said, have I not charged the young men not to touch you? She could have been assaulted in the field. She was a foreigner, and people didn't treat foreigners very well back in those days, right? He provided refreshment for her. When you're thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn. He provided for her. Those things are amazing. When she went out that morning for just a few morsels of grain that were left in the dirt, she had no idea that she would come home with all of those blessings and even more, things that are worth far more than money. And it's just the beginning of the work that God was doing. And it's because of Ruth's faith and Ruth's service that she was receiving these blessings. She was abiding in God, and that's the only place that blessing can be found. But there's one more piece that sticks out to me from this chapter of Ruth, and that is Naomi's hope. Naomi's hope. Starting in verse 17 says, She gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was in about an ephah of barley. And she took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you glean today? And where have you worked? Blessed is the man who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz." And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Naomi also said to her, "This man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers." Ruth had worked hard. She had put her faith in the God of Israel, and God blessed her for it. I mean, after bending and stooping and picking grain out of the dirt and dust all day long, God blessed her, and she was able to bring home a bit of food and about an ephah of barley to Naomi so that they could be cared for. If you're wondering about how much an ephah is, it was no small amount in those days, especially for the kind of day's work that she was doing. Can you imagine how much grain you would have if you were just picking up individual pieces of grain out of the dust? How much you'd have, even if you worked all day? I mean, about a handful maybe, right? Maybe a couple handfuls. But this ephah is about as much as Ruth could carry. About 22 liters, or 3/5 of a bushel, a little more than 5 gallons is what she was given by the end of the day. It was a much needed blessing for Naomi, who immediately reacted with praise to God for his goodness to her and Ruth. Her attitude changed from bitterness back to praise. She had been worn down by so many years having spent away from God. But now she's reminded again that God provides. God blesses us when we live in him. Before, she could only see her pain, her loss, and her hurt, but now she's able to see clearly again. And even though she had been a major part of Ruth's newfound faith in God, Ruth's life and her character in the midst of this trial made this great impact on Naomi's life. It come full circle, right? You know, I think that's a big part of what community and family is all about. We all go through times where we get worn out, drained emotionally, physically, spiritually, all the way out. And we need the example and the encouragement of those around us to remind us that God provides, that God's love is real, that God's love means he cares for us, even in those times of dryness, spiritual, physical, whatever it is. And so often we get blinded in those desert places with bitterness and resentment. And God can even use someone whose life he's used to change us. So Naomi fed into Ruth's life over in Moab, and now he's using Ruth to feed into Naomi's life. Isn't that amazing? He can use even somebody whose life he used to help shape us in order to continue to shape their life for him. And like Naomi, our lives can be Our eyes can be reopened to see the goodness of God, even by somebody who we helped earlier on. This is what Naomi was experiencing when Ruth came back from this hard day's work and she was full of joy, right? And she was telling her all that had happened. When Ruth told her it was Boaz, Naomi couldn't help but saying, "May he be blessed by the Lord whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Her spirit was filled. It was renewed. She was uplifted. Her hope was restored. You know, it's easy to find ourselves these days in some difficult situations in this fallen world. Sometimes these situations are of our own making. Sometimes it's just the result of sin in a fallen world running rampant from lots of different people in lots of different places. Sometimes it's a difficulty, sometimes it's pain from loss. But those hardships that we go through, if we're not intentional about some things, they can leave us in the place where Naomi was in chapter 1, bitter and resentful towards God and his people. And so when we find ourselves in that desert like Naomi was, having been too long outside of God's blessing, we need to take some notes from Ruth and Naomi here. When times are tough, keep the faith. God will provide. He will provide. He will always provide for us. Stay diligent and keep serving. Work as though God will always provide for you, because he will always provide for you. That's true. Even in those times when we don't see the reality of God's working right in front of us, he is working. He was already working even when Naomi was bitter and resentful. He was already making this happen. And finally, don't leave the community of believers. You never know who God will use to lift you up in those difficult times and renew your spirit and your hope, but you can bet that it's going to be somebody whose trust is in God and whose life is giving him glory. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for the example of Ruth and Naomi. Thank you for letting us see that people in the Bible are real, and they go through difficult times and struggles, and sometimes it's hard not to be bitter in this difficult world. Thank you, too, Lord, that you do provide for us, and that you use people around us to feed into our hearts, to lift our spirits when we're down, to teach us new things, and to remind us of who you are. Lord, help us to be a people who remind those around us of who you are, that makes your name great through praise and honor and glory of you. Help our lives to point to you like Ruth's did. In Jesus' name, amen.